Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. I am said Moe, and this is Paisley Penny Arcade. This is a live broadcast, unless you're listening in the future, in which case it is a recorded broadcast. Either way, it's a broadcast. Either way, I'm Moe, or was Moe, depending on how far in the future you're listening to this, or will be Moe, depending on how far past in the past you're listening to this. So, welcome! Time is eventful, or uneventful, depending upon... forget it. All right, so here we are on the 11th of September, 2024, Wednesday. Wednesday. How are ya? Hope you're doing well. Just in case you are wondering what events are taking place around this here time, well, there was a big debate yesterday between Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States, and Donald J. Trump, former President of the United States. Yep. Yep. And, enough said. Enough said. Don't need to get into that. If you want to get into that, go to some social media outlet and read what people have to say, because you know what? It matters. What the things that people have to say, no, they don't. I don't think so, because people have a lot to say, and most of what they have to say is just kind of not so important. Some people, you know, we have a tendency to think that what things people say are sometimes saying important things, and even the most important of people sometimes say things. There's some people who are important say things that are important, and some things that people say, and I'm so bored with what I'm saying. So that tells you how that goes. Yeah. Of course, today is September the 11th. And, yeah. So I won't dwell on that either. You can all delve into your history books and remember what happened. And it is something worth historically keeping. I was a historian in college. I studied history. And I graduated with a degree. I had planned on going further on into history. And my own history took care of that. So that is the name of that proverbial tune. I won't get into all that. My own history is a strange one. Wowee, do I have a strange history. And, there was luck involved, if you want to consider it that. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to do what I call kind of a thought experiment. Do you ever do those? Just kind of start with a thought and see where it takes you? I hope so. Yesterday, when I was on C.A. Brooks' show, right? And I do that once a month. It's the second Tuesday of every month. If you ever watch the Mouseketeer Club, Tuesday was... today is Tuesday, you know what that means. We're gonna have a special guest, and I'm the special guest on the second Tuesday of every month on CA Show. And we talked about... we ended up talking about luck. And I'm not sure quite how we got there. She talked about it because Jupiter and Venus are going to trine on Saturday. And there was an aspect of luck there. We talked about Jupiter and Venus. And I believe in luck to some extent, but not to the extent I used to. I was a superstitious feller at one time. And I think in talking about superstition, the only word you can use is feller. I was very superstitious. And I thought that today it might be interesting to expand upon that concept of luck and superstition. And, for example, some of the superstitions I used to believe in were the horrific black cat superstition, which is if a black cat walks in front of you, it could be bad luck. Now, don't ask me why I believed in all these superstitions. pardon me. Allergy season. There's a cop-out right there. But it is the truth. The truth is that I mean, my background is from Egypt, and the Egyptians happened to be, at one time, rather magically inclined in that everything that surrounded them was magic. Now, we're talking thousands of years ago, so there is some of that, some of this idea of, you know, don't touch that, don't do that, don't do this, don't hold that, don't put that down, don't do that, you know. One of their original ideas was that if you, during childbirth, if you put a knife underneath the bed, it would cut the pain, which is fascinating because my wife, when she was back in the working environment, she knew a woman whose mother, I think, or aunt or something like that, her aunt was an ant, very small, very tiny, but worked very, very hard. Tiny, tiny little aunt, her aunt. She also believed the same thing, that if you put a knife under the bed, it would cut the pain. Now, that's fascinating, because that's a belief that was thousands of years old, and yet still believed. So on and so forth. So maybe that's where I got some of it. I don't know. But it would have to have been carried in the blood. My mom had her own beliefs. My dad, I don't believe, had a superstitious bone in all his body. He was a scientist and very scientifically minded and seemed to kind of, you know, not abhor, but just kind of looked aside from all those things. I was like, nah, you know. He was, I think, somewhat bemused by me, maybe amused by me. I'd say amused, A, bemused, B, C, Semused, EFG, commused, it doesn't matter. So, the black cat one, which is a really unfortunate one, for obvious reasons, and someone told me that if you happen to have a black cat cross in front of you, then what you had to do was drive backwards, especially if you were driving. You had to drive backwards all the way around the block until you had driven backwards around the block to the point where the cat crossed in front of you. I did that once and realized I'm crazy, that's craziness. And the concept of luck, you know, like knocking on wood. Do you know why you knock on wood? Because you are knocking on to wake up the wood spirits, you see, to bring you luck. And it's like, what, why am I doing this? And I realized, well, it's very possible that there are wood spirits, but I believe those wood spirits are well aware of you without you knocking and waking them up and perhaps having them decide to knock back. I believe fully in elemental forces. Why? Because I've experienced such things. Yes, I've experienced such things, and now I only believe in those things that I have experienced. So that means there are a lot of things that I don't believe in that other people readily believe in all the time. People, by the way, who believe in things that are quite mainstream that I don't believe in at all. Now, that doesn't mean I don't believe in scientific phenomena that have not yet been shown to me. Because there are certain things that I do believe in, like the speed of light and the speed of sound, although the speed of sight and light and sound are probably pretty provable, like speed of sound for sure, Mach 1, Mach 2, Mach 3, Macarena. Those things have been proven, especially the Macarena. I saw a wedding video, which I will never forget. It's burned into my retinas, I'm sure. Right now I'm seeing it, and it's like, I wish I could show it to you, but there's no technology yet to show you what's burned into my memory. Wow. But it's one of those things. But there are things that other people believe wholeheartedly that I find completely ridiculous, for reasons that I won't get into here, but that are completely mainstream, that people fully believe, that they're like, oh, yes, I believe in this. Oh, I believe in this. Oh, yay. Oh, wow, do I believe in this. Oh, do I believe. And I think to myself, why do you believe in this? And it's no stranger than what I believe in this. There are many things that I believe in that they go, oh, pshaw. That's ridiculous, Mo. You believe in Tarot? Oh, ho, ho, ho. Pieces of paper with drawings on them, and you drew them? Oh, you crazy person, you. Oh, really? Well, what about this thing you believe in? That you believed in since you were a child? Come now. Oh, please. And so that causes trouble, so I just keep my mouth shut. I'm not keeping it shut now. But presumably, you're listening because you want to listen to. Although someday someone will listen to this, so, we better go give this guy a listen to, or talking to, or a thrashing to, or whatever. But, yeah, whatever, as I said. So the point is that these concepts of luck, when I was young, and even into my young adulthood, spilling salt. Now, I would research superstitions and say, okay, I'm spilling salt when I'm cooking, thud, there goes the salt shaker, scattering salt, what does that mean? So I looked it up and I did some research and realized that the spilling of salt was said to call old hob. Who's hob or old knob? What's hobnob? Hobnob. that's the devil. And then after a while you begin to say, well, wait a minute. I'm calling the devil. Why? Because we sprinkling of salt, that's the calling of the devil. Because it's done in a haphazard, scattered sort of way. And when one calls the devil, one should be very careful. And so if you spill the salt, you throw it over your left shoulder, because throwing over the left shoulder is thereby banishing the devil. And so spilling, especially when you're cooking, you know, you don't want the devil sitting at your table going, yuck, this tastes terrible. This is the worst. Oh, my God, this is terrible. My mother cooked better than this. You know, that sort of thing. And, And so my kids to this day still, my daughter still throws salt over her left shoulder. And I was like, oh, God, why do you do that? And she said, well, Dad, you want to know. I mean, I grew up watching you do it. I'm so sorry, honey. Listen, I don't do that anymore. Since when? Well, for years, decades, actually. Well, thanks a lot, Dad. And you're still going to do it, aren't you? Yes, I learned how to do it from and my son, too. You don't do it anymore. No. Well, do you even know how you do it? No, just because you did it. And you think to yourself, this is the power of throwing these things at kids. So little things that I did that probably, like cursing, you know, like mean-mouthing people, you know. Why, that guy, that dirty, why, yada. No, I didn't do that so much. Superstitions, yeah. The old three on a match thing. To this day, there are people, and I don't smoke anymore, but to this day, when we would be around, three or more people, and we do the 1, 2, 3 thing, it would be 1, 2, nope, have third guy, nope, blow the match out, light a new match. Why? Well, that had to do with the wars. When you were lighting up matches, 1, 2, and kapow, because there were snipers. Ready, aim, and kapow. Well, you know, that was a superstition. And so we get into that, and so eventually I threw superstition away. Now, it's interesting because I recently had a superstition, and I didn't even realize how strong it was until I got rid of it. And I got rid of it for a very strange reason, but I did get rid of it. I'm not even going to talk about it because I'm not quite ready to talk about it yet. But getting rid of it was quite helpful for me because it made me realize how easy it is to fall into the repetition of superstition, right? And you have to end up with a little contrition for it too. Oh, I like that. What is superstition about? Well, it's giving power to an action or something that just generally doesn't necessarily have power. Now, this is different than an amulet or something that you give the thought of power to, which may indeed actually have something. Now, I know that's confusing, but let's talk about the concept of amulets and talismans. Now, if you've ever seen, a Book of Spells or King Solomon the Elder, that book by McGregor Mathers, S.L. McGregor Mathers, a book that says if you own this, it might very well ruin your life, that type of thing. The book itself is said to carry an immense amount of negative energy. I don't think it does, but back in the day, I found the book. The book was incredibly valuable. I thought, I'm going to buy this book. I read the foreword, and it says, just owning this book can cause great damage to you and your life. And it was for $6 in a used bookstore, $12. Because I thought, gee, I'll offer $6. Because I was cheap, can still be. I'm a Taurus, give me that. There's a little superstition, too. And of course, someone bought it out from under me. And of course, they died in a fiery crash. I'm kidding. I know who bought it. I'm sure they're fine. But the book is full of sigils and talismanic drawings and all these things. And I'm sure that the whole point of it, but I was really uncomfortable with the book. It didn't feel right to me. Now, I'd seen the book before, but not this particular copy. It was a very old copy from like the 20s or the 30s. And I just didn't like the way it felt, which meant to me that it had been used by someone probably to do what we call black magic, which in fact is just someone using magic for nefarious reasons. And that to me just means for their own personal gain against other people. And that's the stupidest kind of magic to use. Because, it's... I guarantee you, as Sir Isaac Newton said on many occasions, whatever goes around comes around. Actually, he didn't say that, but that's kind of what it meant. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And that's what happens in the world of magic. You must never, ever, ever, ever do anything with the concept of harming others. Not even just to test it out. And what you must always understand is that when you do something with the idea of trying to control somebody else's will, without doubt, that person will understand at some point that their will has been specifically controlled by you. Because every bit of magic done by you carries a signature. And that's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone who feels you is correct, because that isn't the case. That doesn't mean that everyone who dreams about you is right about it being you, because that is not the case. But there are times when we can reach out in a magical way and people will get it. They'll say, okay, hey, I get this. This is so-and-so who did this or whatever. So it's one of those things. You have to be very conscious of energy. All energy, period, has a signature. And even if someone tries to mask it, and use that term correctly, it is exactly what it is. You're putting a mask on it. You're trying to really heavily conceal the energy. It can't always be masked. It's just unfortunate, but it's true. Actually, it's probably not unfortunate in the long run. A little sip of tea there. Um, But it's like, you know, fingerprints. And although there are no, you know, sleuths with, you know, magnifying glasses looking at that signature, it's felt by everyone. It's actually pretty darned easy after a while to know whom is doing what. So it's a good idea to remember that if one decides to do something. If you're doing something good, it's not the type of thing that people go, oh, wow, I just felt Mo do something good. It's not like that. But they might just say, wow, that feels really good. And the next time they saw you, they might give you a nice smile and say, wow, it's so nice to see you again. That's maybe the end of it. But if you do something bad, they will suddenly go, God, I really feel like Mo did something bad. That's how it goes. That actually comes through pretty loud and clear. It's an interesting part of things. I could tell you stories. Woo-wee! Could I tell you stories? But that's not what we're talking about today. The concept of luck and superstition. So luck, let's talk about luck a little bit. Let's talk about talismans for just a second, or amulets. My thought on amulets is this. One of the most famous of all amulets is the Ankh, life. It's the hieroglyph for life. And it's also a hieroglyph that means flower. So I suppose if you looked at it properly, you could say, oh, yeah, kind of, I see that means a flower. And I believe the flower it's referring to is the lotus. You can kind of see that the top part, the circle part. And I know what the Ankh means because I saw it once in a vision. I saw the explanation of the Ankh in the Tree of Life, or the School of Life. At least I believe that. And it was fascinating, and it was fantastic, and it was real. At least to me, it was real. But it also made an incredible amount of sense, and this was decades ago. Actually, it was given to me as I was trying to explain it to someone else, and it just, boom, there it was, and I was seeing it as I was explaining it to this person, and the person just went, oh my God, that was an amazing explanation. And I was like, huh, yeah, I know, but I was just as flabbergasted as the person was. That's how these things work. When we teach, we learn. Remember that. Those of you who are on this path, remember that as we teach, we learn, especially when it comes to Tarot. It's a remarkable system, and that's how it's meant to be. These mystery schools are exactly that. They are mysteries, and that's the whole point of them. We become initiated as we initiate others. You just have to be careful and watch your ego along the way, or you will be dashed in among the rocks. You know, that's just the way it works. So, but the Ankh, because of its, some people say it has its own geometric properties that makes it do this and that, and I don't believe that's true. But if you hold an Ankh, or hold, better yet, hold a scarab, take a scarab and hold it in your hand. And I'll be doggone if you don't feel it crawling in just a little bit. I do. And is that some strange geometric or biometric thing? No, I don't think so. There's something very specific about it. And it doesn't have to be an old scarab, although I've held scarabs that were thousands of years old in my hand. And they get hot and they begin feeling like they're crawling in my hand. Is it psychosomatic? That's not quite the term. Is it, I guess it might be the term. Is it? Maybe. Could be. But I don't think so. Others have felt it too. There was once a skull, little skull, fit in the palm of your hand skull that I used to hold. And that skull would get as hot as hot could be. Like, almost felt like it was going to burn right through your hand. And there was another one that you could switch out for it, and it wouldn't do anything. And it wasn't that these two skulls were alike or looked the same. You hold one, and because it was something, it would burn you, and the other one wouldn't. And it didn't leave a mark, but it was just uncomfortable. And you could have people switch them around, and, you know. And so you say, what is it about these things? Well, there's something about them. Something special about them. So something there is real. Something there is positively real, and I don't know what it is. So there are objects over the millennia that have some property within them that it makes them different than just a rock. And who knows exactly what that is? Now, I don't know. I don't know. There are certain things that if you wear around your neck, people think that you're going to be luckier than other people. It's going to protect you. These talismans, these amulets will protect you from something. A lot of things, perhaps. But you will be protected. And that protection is very important to people. Pennies. Some people wear a penny around their neck. And you just think, okay. There you go. I know a fellow who carries several coins around his neck. One of each denomination that we have still, including a Chinese coin and a mercury dime. And when you ask why, he says, because they protect me. I think, protect you from what? So, it all depends on what you hold that object to be. Now, do they have any intrinsic value? I don't believe so. So belief is a part of it, too. Belief is a part of it, too. So is there any intrinsic value to those coins? No, but it's belief that's a part of it, too. What is luck? Is luck something that is in the air? Or is luck something that we create around us in our lives on a daily basis, or is it something that can abandon us? I told the story on CA show yesterday. The first time I was in Vegas and shot craps, it was in the middle of the day. Actually, it was like 11 o'clock or something like that. They would have open up their craps tables to low stakes games so that people could learn to play the game and not be terrified that they were going to lose their houses. So I did that. And I rolled the dice in a regulation craps game for like half an hour and never lost once. Never crapped out, as they say. And by the time I was done, and I said, that's enough, I'm done. I probably could have rolled a little bit longer. It was, I suppose, what we call beginner's luck. But I had everyone in that casino who wasn't doing something else who worked there watching my every move. They switched out the dice. Every time I rolled, they patted me down. I forgot that till just now. They patted me down. I'm surprised they didn't make me stand there nude and roll the dice. It was amazing. They had a cane strapped to my back. It was actually a walking stick because I'd had back surgery not that long before. And they took it apart. They said, can we want to take this? You know, it was one of those, we want to take this question, exclamation point, you know? And I said, sure. And they ruined it. They basically broke it because they thought maybe there was some sort of magnetism. I don't know what they thought. And they were talking to me, trying to distract me, and the guy standing next to me made $26,000 on my rolls. I made a couple $100 to buy something. You know, I made enough money to buy a historically interesting ring that I no longer wear for very important reasons, but that I wore for quite a while. And so you say to yourself, this is a fascinating sort of thing. Who knows what that's all about? Like almost half an hour, I rolled the dice and could not lose. and people were just dumbfounded. I had these pit bosses standing there, and they were scary guys. You know, just scary guys. And I knew better than to joke around or anything. You know, that just didn't seem like a good idea. The only time I was under any more scrutiny than that was when I read Turow up in Vail for this big deal thing where Gerald Ford, former President Gerald Ford and his wife were. And I was talking to a Secret Service agent, and he was just asking me questions, and I didn't realize that he was hooked up. And every question I asked him was being checked out on the other end. And, you know, it was a background check, and I had no idea. Yeah. But Mrs. Ford, Betty Ford, who I think is a very cool lady, actually, she was deathly nervous of people like me and us, you know, people who prognosticate into the future or whatever. So I didn't get to read for her or President Ford. But that's all right. I met Buzz Aldrin. I've mentioned that. Shook his hand. You know, never washed it again. So my hand now is covered with ick and poo, because that was like a long time ago. Not poo, not like, you know, just grunge. And kidding. Of course I washed it again. But you see things in real life, and they're so different. You know, he had the bushiest eyebrows I've ever seen. They look like Fetzer's, you know, up above his eyes. And then I saw him later and he had had them trimmed. And I thought, well, I guess that's, you know, what you should do. My dad had bushy eyebrows. So I was rather fond of them because they reminded me of my dad's eyebrows. But isn't that weird how things like that happen? You see someone, you go, oh, that's kind of cool. So what is luck? I don't know that. I see my thought is luck real? See, talismans and amulets sometimes appear like something. They look like something. They look like something in order to They look like something in order to replicate that something, in order to bring about a sense of confidence in that something to protect, if you catch my drift. So, for example, Christians wear a cross around their neck in order to say, hey, I'm a Christian, but also to protect them from anti-Christian things. So in Dracula movies, for example, wearing a cross will protect you from a vampire. Why? Why? Well, essentially, because Bram Stoker wrote it that way, isn't it? Does it make sense? In a Catholic world, I suppose it does. In a Christian world, I suppose it does. There was a movie made by Roman Polanski. I know. Not polite. But in a movie by the Fearless Vampire Slayers, that was the name of the movie, in which Sharon Tate was in the movie. Boy, it was rough. But in that movie, there's a Jewish vampire, and someone holds up a cross. He says, Booby, have you got the wrong vampire? You know, it was just, I think he says Booby, but it's a wonderful little scene. And it's like, yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. It's just not that way, because that whole thing, there's so much of that world is based upon the Christian paradigm. And what if it's not that paradigm? You know, the vampire goes, what if the vampire goes, I don't believe in that. That's not my thing. That doesn't bother me. I was a vampire a long time before that religion started. And it doesn't bother me. You see what I'm saying? So, it's a fascinating concept to ponder, isn't it? What if you've got a Buddhist vampire? From Tibet, let's say, or from, you know, Thailand. And someone whips out a cross and he says, not so much. You know? So, where do these talismans really get their power? I think it's in belief. So if we believe something has a great deal of power, then perchance it must have that power. It gives us some power. For example, I have a ring that I wear. I'm not wearing any jewelry now because I have a puppy. And anything that I wear is fair game for the puppy to chew on. Right? My body is fair game for the puppy to chew on. I'm working on that. But, you know, certainly things that I don't want to have, you know, to be chewed upon or whatever, is that way too. I have two rings. One has a Haida bear on it. And it's a beautiful little thing. It's, you know, just a Haida bear face. And it's very, very well done. Very well done. One of my favorite artists, not one, my favorite artist of the Pacific Northwest, First Nations artist is Bill Reed. He's gone now, but he was a remarkable artist, and I think he influenced an entire generation concurrent while he was alive, but also afterwards. And there's so many talented artists now. Unbelievable. And I have always felt a kinship to the bear. Maybe because I'm just a big, clumsy old guy. And I have another ring that is, it's a Tsimshian soul catcher. And it's stylized, but I like that. So these two pieces of jewelry I wear when I'm wearing jewelry. I don't always wear jewelry. And to me, they have meaning. And to me, they give me a certain tingle. I'll put it that way. I like that, a tingle. Funny, people expect me to, I would think you would wear a scarab and an ankh, you know, for example. Something like that. But I've done that in the past, and I've enjoyed that. But I feel more kinship to the New World, that particular culture, the Pacific Northwest. Their artwork I love. There's a power to it for me. I still feel very much attracted to the ancient Egyptian world and culture. But I'm also very attracted to, to the East, you know, to the Asian culture. I'm attracted to indigenous worlds here on this continent and others. So, I don't know. It's about being human, isn't it? And I look at all taboos as having power and interest and energies. So, I look at all of these things and realize that there's power in all of it, for a matter of fact. You know, as a matter of fact. And that we have to honor all of those forms of energy and keep track in them and of them and with them. Why would you not? Why would you not honor the symbol of the raven or the crow and say, the raven is wise? So if you want to enhance your intelligence on a certain day, which lately, wanting to enhance my intelligence is something I wouldn't mind doing every day. But why wouldn't I wear a raven around my neck? I don't have one, but if I wanted to, that's what I might do. I say, you know what, I'm feel like I'm losing a little bit of a step here, maybe I'll wear a raven around my neck. I wouldn't worry about superstition, because superstition is just that. It is superstition. It is above the concept of the rational and the normal. I don't think there's anything to it anymore. I don't believe it in anymore. I've been through that. Now, I lived in Louisiana. And in Louisiana, you get used to that. I mean, I knew a fellow who was a voodoo priest, and he did not let on to others. Because he was very, very quiet about his religion. It was his religion. And protected by the First Amendment, voodoo, right? Voodoo is, now that's a powerful, powerful practice. And we're not talking superstition there. We're talking about an actual understanding of the laws of nature in an organized and meticulous manner. And mon ami, or mes amis, if I may, it works. It works. But there is a kick to it. It's like a big old elephant gone, huh? Oh, it is. And it can work, and it can work, and it can also have some unexpected little jumps. So you have to know what you're doing if you're going to do it. Because if you don't, ce n'est pas bien. And you don't always know how it's gonna happen. And there is power to that. And it is real. C'est vrai. C'est vrai. It's true. Don't ever doubt that stuff. Don't ever doubt it. And I am very hesitant to crack open that book. I have. And in the beginning, everyone does such things to say, oh, come on, does this work? And you do it and you go, great honk. Not only does this work, but it works really well. And you think, I can control this. But can you? Huh. Can you? That's the problem. Just about everyone discovers that the laws of nature, as Aleister Crowley put it, the laws of nature are blind. It's like standing in a hailstorm and saying, these hailstones will not hit me because I'm favored. I'm favored. I'm a magician. They won't hurt me. Ow, ow, that wasn't meant for, ow. That wasn't meant for me. Jesus, that wasn't meant for me, you know. And before you know it, you're in the ER. The laws of nature are blind. And that's the key to understanding superstition and that sort of thing, is that when we work with any energy, whether it be the highest sort of magical work or whether it be just anything else, you know, is that we are standing in the way of nature. And we can get right in the way of it, or we can be very careful and push that little pebble down the hill and make sure we are as far out of the way as possible. And we can't always decide what the outcome is going to be. And that's the problem with being superstitious, is that repetition of superstition will lead to contrition. Oh, I do like that. I can feel a copyright coming. I do please myself, if no one else. You have to be careful. Because when we deal with amulets and so on, most of the time, I think most amulets are to say, this is who I am and this is what I believe, and yeah. Right? But there are some people who believe that they protect them, and that's what a lot of them are for, too, like a St. Christopher medal. St. Christopher's Medal, and you know, all the different medals, all the different saints. And a lot of the saints are quite fascinating. These people who went through incredible misery, went through unbelievable hell, the martyrs, so that you and I could live better lives. And how do they do that? By being martyred, by being boiled in oil, by having been flayed alive, their skin cut off of them, by being beheaded, by being you know. They're in Tarot, a lot of more, well, a few of them. St. Catherine of Alexandria, who was broken upon the wheel. Not a nice way to go. Fortuna, right? That's the wheel. But very specifically, the wheel in the, you know, they used iconography from Christianity to get underneath the censers when they designed the tarot deck, the modern tarot decks. So that was used. And St. Anthony, right? St. Anthony. Padua? Is that where he's from? I don't remember. He actually didn't get martyred. He just was a hermit. Wore a hair shirt, horse hair shirt, which, my God, it used to make you bleed. I mean, it was just irritate your skin so much. You know. It was just terrible. Terrible what it did to you. It made you bleed. It would cause these rupturing of the skin. And, oh, my God. Terrible. Yeah. St. Barbara of Alexandria. Whew. Whose own father cut her head off. There's the tower. That's right. These stories are so gruesome. But they're meant to imprint in your mind this incredible violent act to make you go, oh, okay, that's pretty important. And that registers this interference matrix, you see. And it startles you. And that's the power, you know. So you wear this little wheel around your neck. And what's that wheel represents the breaking of someone on a wheel. What a horrible way to go. Ugh. Oh, I'll let you look it up. Fascinating stuff. The emotion that gets caught up in something. And that's what it's about. It's about emotion. Emotion is very powerful. So I think that superstition is often about emotion. We have superstition. And then we have emotion, and I think that's what a lot of luck is. Beginner's luck. In beginner's luck, we don't have any idea we can't win. We don't have any idea how hard something is. First time I played darts, I went up against people who had been playing darts for years, and I beat them all. First time. It was like, oh, this is easy. I never won again like that. Not like these, like I did that first time. I thought, I'm going to really win at this game. So I immediately bought a set of darts and a dartboard and a chalkboard. Really got in for about $150 or something. It was cheaper at the time. And then I never won again. Gave it all to my son when he grew up. You know, said, here, darts, dartboard, chalkboard. Here, even some chalk. Here you go. Because it was just rubbish. Frustrating. It was beginner's luck, which meant that I did not understand what I was doing, and I didn't know how to be bad at it. I learned how to be bad at it. So I think that's what beginner's luck is. You don't understand. I don't really have that sense of what luck, that luck is something that is actually real. Now, people will disagree with me, but intuition is luck, right? Intuition. And survival instinct is luck. And intellect is luck. It all comes down to being present and being aware and personal strength. Make your own luck. Don't count on, I mean, yeah, there are elemental forces around, but remember, they are blind forces of nature. they might favor us if we recognize them and understand them. Because if they don't like you, that's not a good thing. I've seen what happens when they don't like us. Oh, could I tell you some stories? I'm not proud of everything I've done in my past. Especially when it comes to, does this work? Does this work? I'll push this button. Oh my God, it did work. I shouldn't have pushed that button. Have you ever had your heart broken? I have. Have you ever gotten what you wanted, only to realize that it was not what you should have had? I have. I sure have. So here we are at the crossroads of something. But we've been at a crossroads of something many times. Don't rely on luck. Make your own luck. This is not a time to rely upon others to do what you think needs to be done. Let's talk about voting for a second. I don't care who you vote for. I just think you should vote. And, oh, Mo, you don't have to tell me what to do. I don't like that. I don't like being told what to do. I've always been around people who hate to be told what to do. And yet everyone tells me what to do all the time. You know, I always end up living with people who say things like, don't you dare tell me what to do. Now, here's what I want you to do right now. Go do this, go do that, go to, but don't you dare tell me what to do. I don't know how that works out. It's just the way it is. But there's one thing I think is very important, and that is to be self-determinative. Determine your own fate. Fate. Think about that word, fate. Self-determination. What could be more important than self-determination? Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of much more than that. And the only way to do that is to be active. To do something about something. I know sometimes it just makes you feel limp. Limp. But we can't be. We have to be active until we can no longer be active, until we are no longer here. Because this life of ours is about vibrancy. We are vibrating at a million, billion, trillion, quadrillion, quintillion, sextillion, heptillion, whatever it is, millicycles a second. Doesn't matter what it is. We are still here, and we have to be active. We have to think. The mind is a powerful tool. The mind is a powerful, powerful, dynamic, integrated part of the universe. You can close your eyes and see anything you want to see. You can see a zedonk, which is a horse with stripes on its legs. See it. You can see a zedonk right now. You can see an elephant. You can see an elephant in my pajamas. And how I got in my pajamas, I don't know. Marx Brothers. Sorry. Right? It doesn't take but a split second to realize the power of the mind. Don't rely on superstition. Don't rely on amulets. Don't rely on anything but your mind and your abilities. You can do it. You can do it if you want. Okay? Hokey dokey, Mo. That's me, not you. I have a dumb Mo. Trust me. Yeah. Dumbo. I like that. Anyway, thought experiment. Thought experiment number 5,272,401.7. Finished. All right. I love you all. I really mean that, and I hope you know it. I hope you get it. Have a lovely week. Have a lovely, lovely week. If all goes well, I'll be here next week. Until then, peace and love. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 12th of July. July, yeah, 2023. Oh, the year is just speeding by, isn't it? Isn't it? Already the 7th month of the 23rd year of the 21st century. And to think just a moment ago I was in Mrs. Parsons' fifth grade class at Laurel Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, go ahead, those of you listening who want to steal my identity. I won't get you that far. And now that's been a challenge. And they'll go, yes, yes, I can do everything. Well, go ahead. I mean, really, it's the world today. Oh, the world today. Isn't it a sorry place? It's not that bad. It's weird. A lot of strange goings on. There are good people left in the world. There are good people left in the world, which was proven to me recently. Thank you again. You know who I'm talking to. So, what should we talk about today? How's the weather been? How are you feeling? How has your weather been? Wow. To those of you in Vermont, and I know that there are a couple of listeners in Vermont, Montpelier, and Vermont is a destination place. It's a destination state where people go to, like Colorado. People come to Colorado to see the mountains and to, you know, buy rock candy because we have lots of mountains and lots of rocks, and they make candy that looks like rocks. And it's good. We have saltwater taffy in Estes Park, and of course, I'm not sure what that has to do with the mountains, but it's pretty good stuff. And in Montpelier, Vermont, they have flooding, and that's Vermont is the same sort of thing. A lot of